Pop Spotting 174.
Thursday, December 1st, 2011. Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
And just like that, it's December. And fortunately, the month kicks off on a Thursday. That means it's once again time for Pop Talk and Trivia.
It's where a listener like you, and perhaps someday, yes, you, join us on the show to give us three things worth checking out. Then in exchange for your generosity, we gift you with some trivia.
Joining us today is Greg Mariotti, who lives in Seattle with his wife and two kids. Greg is perhaps best known to geeks as the man behind Pixar Talk, the single best website dedicated to all things Pixar.
He's a movie and music fanatic, and he has also run the official Cameron Crowe website, theuncool.com, for the past 7 years.
We first connected with Greg way back when we were doing Hawaii Up and stayed in touch through the transmission. Now he's been sending in great stuff for Pop Spotting, and we are really excited to finally have him on. Greg, welcome.
Welcome,
Greg. Thank
you, guys.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Sorry to interrupt you there, Ryan.
No, not at all. Aloha. You've been a friend for a long time. In fact, I did want to mention early on a little bit of trivia. You know, you were listening to Hawaii Up and then through the transmission, and it was back in the summer of 2009 where you had just, I think, taken a trip or planned a trip out here, and you sent this stray email saying that, you know, now that we've seen that end of season 5, I bet that when we see the start of season 6, we're going to see both the plane land at LAX and people still waking up on the island after Jughead went off. So I did want to give you credit for nailing that even back then.
Oh, that's so funny. I'm really honored to be on this show today. You guys, we can joke about Al Gore inventing the internet, but I feel like you guys invented podcasting. So you were the first podcast I ever listened to. And I'm so, so glad that you guys are back doing Pop Spotting, because without you guys keeping me company as I commute to and from work every day, it just wouldn't be the same. So thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure.
It is absolutely our pleasure. And it is only because we get to connect with cool people, including you, and in particular you, that we keep on going. So thanks for coming on the show. And here on Pop Talk and Trivia, all we do is we ask our brilliant guests, such as you, to enlighten us on three things that you might think are worth checking out, and we will check them out. So Greg, what is your first pick?
The first one today that I want to talk about is a 2008 Australian film called The Square. It's a film by the Edgerton brothers, Joel, who wrote the script and co-stars in the movie, and Nash Edgerton, who directs it. You might know Joel. He was one of the stars of the indie hit last year, Animal Kingdom, which got a lot of praise and I think an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. And also, he was in the recent film Warrior, and he's going to be in a lot of films going forward. He's one of the stars of The Great Gatsby, starring Leo DiCaprio and Carey Mulligan and others. It comes out in 2012, but he's not the main star of the film. The main stars are Aussie actors David Roberts and Claire Vanderboom. You might recognize Claire. She plays Dano's ex-wife on Hawaii Five-0.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But this is a little, it's a small, independent, low-budget, little noir thriller. I don't want to get into too much with the plot, but there's twists and turns and double crosses and affairs and love triangles and quadrangles. And it's really a lot of fun. It's a great little film. I think it flew under the radar in 2008. It's definitely worth your time to seek it out.
Anything we could compare it to? Any other filmmakers or styles? I mean, we certainly know the Edgertons, but is there any other style that this might invoke or be compared to?
Yeah, I think it feels to me like an early Coen Brothers film, like Blood Simple. You just don't see a lot of films like this anymore. And also maybe a little bit, if you've seen the Wachowski Brothers' first film, Bound. Reminds me a little bit of Bound as well, which is a great film if you haven't seen it. Much different than The Matrix and the things they've done since, but definitely worth seeking out.
How did you discover this movie?
Gosh, how did I discover this movie? I don't really remember. I probably heard somebody talking about it, whether it was Slash Film or Film Spotting or somebody maybe a couple years back.
No,
or maybe
I definitely heard Film Spotting talking about it. Okay.
Then that's probably where I heard it. And usually when somebody comes on the scene like the Edgertons, I'll kind of backtrack and try to catch up on some of their earlier stuff. And it's a really good movie. Definitely something I would recommend to anybody. It's definitely R-rated, but it's not too bad.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic pick, and you know, we love indie films, we love actually Australian films, something that you know, when they do surface on the radar, they're almost always fantastic. We'll check out The Square.
So what is your second recommendation?
Boy, I don't know. I got to be careful on this one because I'm absolutely in love with this. It's Downton Abbey, which I don't know if anyone's talked about on the show or not.
No.
It's wonderful. It's a British television series. It's debuted back in September 2010. It was on ITV, which I guess is the British equivalent of PBS or public television. And you know, I'm a big fan of Jane Austen and period films, but this one completely flew under my radar until I heard recently it had won a bunch of Emmys. And so then I'm like, okay, we have to check this out. My wife and I love those kind of films and series, and so we just finished devouring the 7 episodes of the first season. And it basically centers around a fictional family in 1912 in Britain. And the series starts right after the sinking of the Titanic. And some of the passengers on board have implications to the plot that drives the first season. And I don't really want to say a whole lot about the plot, but basically the show focuses on this aristocratic family and their servants. And so you get both the servants' perspective and the family's perspective on what's going on and how their lives are intertwined. Each class is given equal screen time in the show, and so you get to really know the maids and the cook and the, you know, the butlers and the valets and everybody that's working behind the scenes. And then you get to know the main character, which is Earl of Grantham, and his wife, played by Elizabeth McGovern, and who I hadn't seen in a movie in a long time, or a TV series in a long time. And his mother is played by Maggie Smith, who's amazing. She has all the best lines in the first season, and I think she did win an Emmy for a Best Supporting Actress on a TV or miniseries. The second season is just wrapping up in the UK, and it will be available in the US, I think, in January. But one thing I would say for sure is do not watch this on Netflix, and do not watch this on PBS, because they cut 2 hours out of the show. And a lot of it is around, again, without getting too much into the plot, a lot of it is around Downton Abbey, which is where this family lives, and who has rights to the estate if the main character were to pass away. And so a lot of that was, I think, that they thought was too complicated for U.S. audiences, and they cut a lot of that out of the first season. And so you'll definitely want to check it out on either DVD or Blu-ray, because you can get the uncut versions that way.
Wow, that's insane. But I also can totally understand kind of selling the American viewing public short, perhaps.
So how dedicated are they to following period? Is it like a real history lesson? Do they talk about events happening outside of the house and current events? Is it like Mad Men in its authenticity?
That's a great question. To a certain extent, yes. I mean, they talk about Titanic. They talk about the assassination of the archbishop that sort of, I guess, catapults World War One, which plays into the first season. Not a whole lot of like benchmarks along the way, but there's a plot around the youngest daughter and her just her eagerness to get involved in like women's rights and a lot of the things that were going on around that time. The first season, I think, focuses on 1912 to 1916. And then I think the second season is like 1916 through 1919. And I believe that the third season goes on from there. So there is certainly a Mad Men-esque quality to the fact that they are kind of keeping to a certain timeline. But they jump around a little bit in terms of, you know, from one episode to the next, 3 or 4 months may have passed. But it is a fascinating show. And I just absolutely love it. Just can't say enough good about it.
Well, you've got us sold there. I love it. Downton Abbey, will be looking for it.
And what is your third recommendation?
All right, here's my curveball. I was going to talk about the surfer, Eddie Aikau, and I just felt like I was going to butcher it and I wouldn't do him or the Hawaiian culture justice. It's a great book, but I'm going to kind of push past that. And I just want to talk about something interesting that may be a little different from anything anyone's talked about, and I just want to talk about the Blu-ray format.
Ooh, you know, we always have this question on our show. I mean, a lot of people are always talking about it, and we're always like, oh, you know, we're on analog cable still. We're okay with DVD. Netflix streaming is perfectly fine. I think we're just going to skip Blu-ray. So, all right, Greg, sell us. Why do we need to do this?
All right. Well, I was thinking about this topic, and I remember you and I talking about this. The last time I saw you, you were standing in line at Ala Moana waiting for iPad 2 to come out. And my wife and I had just left the beach and looked like crap, but ran into you at the mall. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but I really feel like if you're a cinephile or movie fanatic, you must have Blu-ray. And I think the big reason why really is just the quality of the picture. You've got Netflix streaming is great and Hulu is great and all these other things are great. And I kind of compare it to, like, if you want to rent something, great, watch it on Netflix, you know, go to Redbox, whatever, stream it. But in terms of if you want to own a movie, the best way to possibly own a movie is to own the Blu-ray. You're going to get 1080p, you know, full HD picture. You're going to get lossless audio, either DTS or Dolby Digital, which is going to sound fantastic. Your average Blu-ray disc holds up to 50 gigs of data. And if you figure, you know, eventually 3, 4, 5 years from now, streaming may catch up, but will it ever be able to have the quality and the extras of a Blu-ray? I just don't think it will. I think this is the best packaged media we've ever seen. Obviously, it's backwards compatible with your DVD collection. It will upscale your DVDs and make them look practically high def too. And I think what's really cool is that this is the season, and you know, Blu-ray's been around a while, but this is really the season where it's really starting to catch on. You're seeing movies like Captain America and Transformers and some of the recent summer blockbusters that are selling 50% or more of their copies on Blu-ray now. And when you factor in the fact that the players are a great player, it can be picked up for $100, $150. And they're putting, you know, usually you can buy a Blu-ray now and it comes with a regular DVD copy. And so you're kind of getting the best of all three. You can give your DVD to the kids. You can put the digital copy on your iPad or your iPhone or whatever device you have. And you can watch your Blu-ray when you really want to watch the best picture and sound. So I love it. And it is the way to watch a movie, and nothing else compares in terms of the picture quality.
I have told him all of this, and I will be really upset if you manage to convince him and I don't.
Well, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, for me, it's, you know, as a geek, and I was, you know, remembering the entire battle between Blu-ray and HD DVD, for example. And, you know, it's the idea that physical media is passe, that, you know, yes, now we're selling 50% on Blu-ray. Some of that is helped by the fact that now you sometimes can't buy a DVD without picking up the Blu-ray. So, but yes, it is Christmas coming up, and we go to Costco every weekend. So I think one of those devices might in fact fall into our shopping cart, perhaps by accident. That's a fantastic pick. You make a great case. I mean, I'm still wondering with the impression that a Blu-ray DVD still costs $36. So it's good to know that there is such a thing as bargain Blu-ray. And I agree with what you're saying. For streaming, for stuff that you're just going to rent and you're just curious about, that's fine. But you do want a good format for the collector's stuff, the stuff that you love and want to keep around. So, okay.
True. I think you did it. I'll give you one more thing, and then I'll let the topic go.
Okay.
One thing, you know, just watching something like Downton Abbey, I mean, for me, when I'm watching something from Britain or wherever else, I like to watch it with subtitles on. And a lot of times you can't stream that stuff with subtitles. So to me, the best way to watch it is on a Blu-ray, where you can pop the subtitles on, and you know, you can really hear. If you miss a line of dialogue, you're able to look at the subtitles and see what the heck the character said.
I think you got me sold, and Jen certainly was in your camp for a long, long time. Jen, what were Greg's picks today?
The Square, a 2008 neo-noir film out of Australia by Nash and Joel Edgerton, Downton Abbey, a British television period drama series on ITV, and the Blu-ray video format.
Fantastic picks, Greg, and I think you've definitely made some recommendations that are going to impact our lives in the coming weeks. With that said, though, we want to impact your brain. Here on Pop Talk and Trivia Thursday, we now want you to pick 2 out of 3 trivia categories, and you only have to get 2 out of 3 of those questions correctly. Are you ready to play?
I am, and thankfully somebody had a Gaga category a couple weeks. I don't have to deal with Gaga, hopefully.
All right, Jen, what are Greg's categories?
Cranberries, I Want to Believe, and Cool Breeze Reeves.
So cranberries, yes, everyone has to deal still with Thanksgiving leftovers. We've got I Want to Believe, that's a TV category, and Cool Breeze Reeves, about a specific movie star with the last name Reeves. Which categories are you interested in, Greg?
Well, I think I'll take I Want to Believe because it sounds sort of X-Files, and I might have a shot at getting a couple right there. The last one sounds like Keanu, so I'll go that route as well.
All right, you got it, Jen. Let's start with I Want to Believe.
Number one, what major event in Fox Mulder's life, which took place when he was 12 years old, drove his obsessive interest in the alien and paranormal?
Boy, I think this might be the only one I'm going to get right, but I believe his sister was abducted, or I don't know if she was abducted, but she went missing, and I think her name was Samantha or something, and I think he thought it was aliens.
That is perfect. That's fantastic. Yes, it was the abduction of his sister, Samantha Mulder, by supposedly extraterrestrials. Of course, they do explore that it might have been something else later in the series. Fantastic. Number two.
Question two. Dana Scully was a staunch skeptic throughout most of the series, believing only in things that can be proven or explained by science. However, one aspect of her character did show an understanding of matters of faith. What was it?
Oh, boy. I think it might have something to do with her dad, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that she had some sort of connection with her dad, even though he'd passed away.
Well, she grew up in a Catholic family, and she wore a cross around her neck.
All right, so no.
Maybe that also is a true answer, but unfortunately not quite the one we were looking for. But that's okay, Greg, because you can still take this category with the last question.
And number three, Fox Mulder and Dana Scully were the stars for most of the show's run, but by the 8th and 9th season, Mulder had stepped back. Their boss got most of the limelight, along with two new FBI agents. Name at least two of these three last season's stars.
Oh, boy. So, I know one of them was... is it Robert Patrick from Terminator 2?
Very good, yes.
But I didn't watch those last few seasons. I don't think a lot of people did. And gosh.
Well, you could also just name their boss who became a star, a leading character in those last seasons.
Okay. You know what? I don't remember his name. I remember the actor's name. I think it was Mitch Pileggi or something like that, but I cannot remember the character's name.
Hey, we will take the actor. Yes, that is Mitch Pileggi playing director Walter Skinner, and you got FBI agent John Doggett. So you got the question. You got the category. Who was the third agent there?
Agent Reyes, played by Annabeth Gish.
Ah, that's right. But still, that is good enough to take it. You've got the X-Files, I Want to Believe. One more category here, Cool Breeze Reeves.
Keanu Reeves turned 47 earlier this year, but found his first success as a teen heartthrob. His first name is Hawaiian, as his estranged father was from the islands. Let's see how well you know this excellent actor. Question one. In the 1989 comedy Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Keanu and co-star Alex Winter take a time-traveling telephone booth to collect famous historical figures. Name at least two of them.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I haven't seen that movie in 20 years. Let's see. Gosh, who do they run into? I remember George Carlin. I'm trying to think what character. Oh, he might have been like the main. I don't think he was a historical character. Why can't I?
He was their guide.
Yeah, all I'm thinking of is Time Bandits with, you know, Sean Connery playing Robin Hood. Nothing from Bill and Ted's is sticking out. I completely have no answer on
that. Well, Greg, I'll help you out a little bit. Now, they had to do this to do a basic history report in high school, so they just had to hit some of those big historical figures, some pretty short A-list historical figures. Do you want to try guessing a couple?
Okay, how about Christopher Columbus and Wolfgang Amadeus?
No.
Wow. But those are both fantastic guesses. Maybe those are on the DVD extras. Sorry about that. Jen, who were those historical figures?
Lincoln, Beethoven, Billy the Kid, Freud, Genghis Khan, Joan of Arc, Napoleon, and Socrates.
Wow, lots. Beethoven, I was kind of close.
You were close, exactly. That's fine. But still, you can't take this category if you can get these two additional questions.
Question two. Reeves was a star of the 1999 blockbuster sci-fi film The Matrix, written and directed by the Wachowski brothers. He played a character named Neo, someone prophesied to end the reign of the machines. But what was his real name?
Oh, yes. Mr. Anderson.
Yes, yes.
What was his first name?
I think we'll take that, but can you get that yeah. first name?
Neo Anderson. I can't remember his first name. I'm just that whole Mr. Anderson thing so ingrained in the brain.
Right, right. You got it. It is Thomas A. Anderson, program writer for a respectable software company. A social security number. He pays his taxes and he helps his landlady carry out her garbage. Sorry, I'm not doing a really good Hugo Weaving there. All right. So you got that question. We'll give it to you. So one more question here in Cool Breeze Reeves.
In the 1994 action flick Speed, Keanu plays Officer Jack Traven, who faces off against a madman played by Dennis Hopper. Keanu makes a pivotal discovery when he notices that Sandra Bullock's character went to what university?
Oh, gosh. Jen, you're devious.
We aim to please.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, I know the movie was set in California. Gosh.
She's wearing a jacket from the school, and Dennis Hopper's character just starts giving her a nickname, which is the mascot of the school.
Yeah, that's when he found out there was a camera on the bus.
Very good.
Darn it, darn it, darn it. All I can think of is his little, what do you do, what do you do tagline that him and Dennis Hopper kept playing with. I'm going to say the Blue Devils, Duke Blue Devils.
Oh, that's a good guess, but no, I'm sorry.
The Arizona State University
Wildcats.
Wildcats.
Yep. Yes. The Wildcats. Oh, my gosh, but so close there, Craig. Pretty good there with Cool Breeze Reeves. And I knew that you would do pretty good on a movie category, but I guess you're an X-Files fan as well.
A little bit. Like I say, the first five or six seasons, I was really into it, but I was hoping for a Point Break question. So,
well, we might have that on a future show so you can yell at your iPod. Greg, it's always great to talk to you. It's awesome to even run into you in person, but I'm glad you are out there on the internet doing fantastic things. Before we let you go, can you let everybody know where they can find more Greg?
Absolutely. So for sure, PixarTalk.com mm-hmm. and PixarTalk for Twitter. But also should briefly mention my affiliation with film writer-director Cameron Crowe. As you guys mentioned, I've been working on his site, The Uncool, for 7 years. What's great about Cameron is if you've seen Almost Famous, you know that he gets the whole fan experience and what it means to be a fan. And I was doing an unofficial site for a few years before I got involved with his official site, and basically he brought me on board. He said, you know what, I'm not going to do an official site without you. And so he's a generous man. He's a super nice guy. He's everything you would expect him to be. And so you can visit and learn about all things Cameron Crowe at theuncool.com. And he has a new movie coming out on December 23rd called We Bought a Zoo with Matt Damon, and hopefully people will go see that.
Well, we're certainly going to see that. We are big fans of Cameron Crowe. We think it is awesome that he's so open and adopted the fan community and adopted you, Greg. We certainly would as well. Greg Mariotti, thank you very much for joining us here on Pop Spotting today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Aloha.
Aloha.
We love sharing other voices and far sharper minds than ours here on Pop Spotting. You don't have to be a podcaster or a blogger or a Pixar expert. If you're enjoying the podcast or would like to be a guest on the show, just please get in touch.
You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, or you can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, where many listeners are posting great comments and great questions and pretty cool links.
And you can find us on Twitter. You can find us at twitter.com/popspotting, twitter.com/Hawaii, or twitter.com/Mrs. Hawaii.
We'll be back tomorrow with another great serving of Pop Spotting feedback.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and thank you for listening.
Mahalo, folks, for Pop Spotting. I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
See ya.
Bye. Later. Yeah.